Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places, this is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. On today's show, Rockwired presents the blistering hard rock sound of Katie Kirkover, former rock star supernova frontman Lucas Rossi, and the full-throttled girl power of rock diva Jillian Risco. Stick around for more. Rockwired is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Let me be the first to tell you that a week away was way too long. Welcome to another edition of Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. Got a great show for you today. Thanks to this show, I've gotten reacquainted with my old friend Lucas Rossi, the former lead singer of Rockstar Supernova. He's back on the scene with his debut CD, his debut solo CD, Hollywood, which will be hitting stores in July. I'm also happy to be welcoming back the Rockwired Readers' Poll Award nominee Jillian Risco, who's been hitting the road in support of her CD, 1111. But first, Rockwired's going to shine its ever-loving light on another hard rock princess by the name of Katie Kirkover. I actually became acquainted with Katie several months ago when she released her CD, Blister. As a young girl, Katie was a musical prodigy with an aptitude for violin. At the age of 17, she packed her bags and moved from her hometown of Rockwood, Illinois, to Nashville, Tennessee, and became a busy session musician. Eventually, Kirkover had to let her rock and roll side shine through. She teamed up with guitarist Tim Craven, and the two have forged an edgy rock sound. I've got the chance to speak with Katie Kirkover and her guitarist Tim Craven about the exciting new release, and we'll get to hear that in just a few minutes. Right now, from the CD Blister, here is Katie Kirkover with Habit.
Tissue on my neck.
From her CD Blister, that was Katie Kirkover with Habit. Visit Katie at myspace.com/KatieKirkover. I had a chance to catch up with Katie regarding her new album and her future plans. Here's how it went. With the album out there for everybody to hear, has there been any reactions to it that have surprised you at all?
Well, we've had an overwhelming, positive reaction to it, but I don't think that I've had any adverse reactions that have really surprised me, no. Everything's been really, really positive and exciting feedback.
I see. And now that it's out there, how do you feel about it?
I am really excited. I love it. It's like a part of you gets released to the world for everyone else to hear, and it couldn't be more exhilarating. So I love it, and I've just been looking forward to doing the next one. And actually, Tim and I are in the studio today working on some new material. So I'm really, really excited about it.
Not meaning to leap ahead too much, but you know, how do you think in what direction do you think you're going in for this next recording?
To be honest with you, we just kind of go as it comes to us. We don't necessarily try to pick a song and go, okay, we're going to go in this direction with it this time. When we write a song, we decide, you know, how that song's going to, what the track is going to do based on the song. So, for instance, this next song we thought we might actually try a little bit more of like a backbeat type groove to it. I guess kind of similar to another newer song that we have out on the MySpace page called Too Bad that we've got a lot of positive response from as well. So it's hard to say. We record several songs and they all take on their own shape, and then we pick the songs that fit best together. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Talk about the songwriting process between you and Tim.
The songwriting process between Tim and I is very easy. I think one of the reasons it's easy is I've not really met anyone like Tim that has the same musical visions as I do, in a sense. Like, we just seem to be on the same page when we write together. Usually, one of us will come up with a guitar riff or, you know, an idea lyrically, and it just kind of sparks something, and we just kind of take off, and it's a very fun and easy process. I've had some other writing sessions with other people that have been a little bit more difficult, just because you don't always connect on a creative level. So Tim and I really connect on that level, so it makes it really easy.
Talk about how music began for you.
Music began for me. It's so funny, I get that all the time. My music world is a big mishmash of different types. My mom started me in classical violin lessons when I was 4 years old, and I continued through the Suzuki Method training until I was maybe 17. But during that time, I also got a guitar for Christmas one year when I was 10, and I started writing songs. I bought a guitar chart cord and I hung it on the back of my door, and I just learned the chords off there and started writing songs. And it evolved, you know, over the years, from like, you know, juvenile young sounding songs and you know, not really shaped out well, into, you know, more of the rock stuff, because I was really heavily influenced at the time by a lot of classical music, but also by what my sister was listening to, with it being Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and Metallica and all this stuff. So I had a pretty vast, from classical to rock, and the Beatles even. She listened to the Beatles all the time, so I absorbed them. But it just kind of evolved. I took all of that from my childhood and just honed the art. And I moved to Nashville when I was 17, almost 18, and I began touring with different country artists here in town. And one year decided, you know, I was kind of done with playing in other people's bands, and I had continued writing that entire time, and that's whenever I met Tim, and we connected on a musical level and decided, you know, that we wanted to start a project together. So then it resulted in Blister.
You're based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is sort of the country music capital, if you will, yet it's got this sort of rock and roll undercurrent. Describe what it's like being surrounded by that kind of scene.
Well, it's a great, actually, the scene is really evolving, which is really, you know, fantastic. Before, when I moved to town, it's only been in the last couple of years, actually, that the rock scene has really exploded, which is wonderful for all the musicians here, because I think that people don't always realize that there's more to Nashville than just country music. And with the latest bands that have come out of Nashville, Kings of Leon and Paramore and another band, Framing Hanley, they all were, you know, they've all kind of exploded at the same time. Some, you know, obviously Kings of Leon way more than others, but it's really given a break to the rock scene in Nashville. And to be surrounded by, you know, the country industry, there's a lot of, you know, country clubs, let's say that, or venues, and we're getting more rock venues, which is nice. We've got a handful of cool ones to play, but with that, it's just being a music town, and there's just a ton of really, really great musicians. And I know, like, some of the musicians, they not only have, like, their own rock band, and they're amazing musicians at that, but then they also, like, sub out for country artists, too. So it's kind of like a big, you know, mishmash of just really, really talented people that I'm, you know, really excited to be around and love the scene at this point, and just hope that it continues to grow, and I hope that, you know, we continue to see more of a rock presence and kind of discovery in Nashville, because it's just a really great town with a lot of extremely, extremely talented musicians in it, in all genres of music.
From the album Blister, what songs resonate for you the most personally, and why?
The song that resonates with me the most personally, I have a couple on there. I would say that on a personal level, the song Gone Again is a very personal song to me. It was written, without getting too specific, about someone in my life that was going through some abusive times, and that's where that song came from, and it's, so I have a nice, you know, a closeness, personal attachment to that, and I feel like it, you know, helped that person out through their life, or through that time in their life. And I would say another one would be probably Habit. It's a fun song, but also it's a sexy song, and it's just a fun one too to rock out on stage. So those would probably be the two.
And what would you like someone to come away with after they've heard Blister?
I would like for them to come away just feeling fun, energized, and have a smile on their face after they listen to it. Because I do. When I play the music and when Tim and I are writing it, it's always a very, very fun process, and it's exciting and it's full of energy. And so I hope that translates through the record to the listener, and that they feel that same emotion.
Visit Katie Kirkover at myspace.com/KatieKirkover. From her CD Blister, here is Katie once again with Gone Again.
Stumble and falter. It's hard to since teaming up with Katie as a producer and co-songwriter and guitarist, what has been the biggest surprise for you out of this whole experience?
Biggest surprise for me would probably be how much Katie is willing to endure of my kind of obsessive personality. I'm not always the easiest person to get along with, especially in the studio. When it comes to doing vocals and doing takes and getting things right, I'm surprised that she is as thick-skinned as she's been able to be. That's probably my biggest surprise. I mean, short of the fact that how quickly I feel like some of the songs have come together. I've worked with other artists, and I don't always feel like the songs come together as fast as they come together with Katie. But that would definitely be my biggest surprise.
And what is it, you know, besides what is it other than a thick skin that you think Katie brings to this project that makes it work?
Well, she is the project. I mean, it's really her. I mean, it's her vocal. You know, it's kind of the thing that happens with any group of musicians. It's the person's voice who you recognize the most as the band. So, you know, when Van Halen broke up, David Lee Roth went off and did, you know, solo projects with much success, and a lot of people were concerned with what was going to happen with the rest of the band of Van Halen. So, I mean, she is the project. I mean, she brings a lot to it. It's her, you know, vision as much as it is, you know, her on the cover. You know, as simple as that sounds. You know, she's the voice of it, the face of it, and, you know, half of the creation of it. So, a lot.
Talk about how the two of you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Without her, it wouldn't be Katie Kirkover without Katie Kirkover.
Fair enough. Talk about how the two of you met.
We met through some mutual friends and like colleagues, if you will, through in Nashville, just working kind of in the scene and around the scene. We ended up actually working together with one artist. And kind of connected that way, you know, a lot of dead time out on the road and trying to figure out what to do with all that spare time that you have waiting around for sound check and the show. And we started writing and working that way and just realized that it was like kind of as Katie said, it clicked really fast. And I had worked with some other artists and it didn't really hit a stride as quickly as I did with Katie. And you know, from there we just started recording songs and demoing songs, and the stuff that we started writing is pretty far away from where we're at right now, oddly enough. I mean, we have some demos that we listened back to like maybe 6 months ago, and we're kind of laughing at like, wow, we wrote that song. So it was like weird. And that's really how it started. I mean, we just kind of started writing, and I had a studio, and I was like, let's come over and like let's demo these songs and get some of our mutual friends to play on it. And out of that kind of came, you know, what's on the record. We had a lot of stuff that didn't make the record that probably shouldn't, because it didn't necessarily fit as far as stylistically or what we were trying to do from a production standpoint. So it was really through friends that we found each other.
Talk about how music began for you.
It began for me a long time ago. It's probably is my earliest memories are of music. You know, listening to records basically that my parents had, and I was fortunate enough that my mom, not so much my dad wasn't really a music guy, but my mom had a pretty decent record collection. And when I say record, I mean 45. She was kind of a single buyer. She didn't have a lot of, I mean, they had some albums, but mainly had this like an amazing 45 collection that I would just sit and listen to over, you know, hours and hours and hours, everything from Elvis Presley to the Beatles to, you know, Jan and Dean and, you know, a couple one-hit wonders from the 50s and stuff. And, you know, their record collection was pretty eclectic, everything from, like, you know, Kenny Rogers to Johnny Mathis to Jan and Dean, and like I said, the Beatles and some Rolling Stones. So it's kind of all over the map, which is probably why my musical tastes are as diverse as they are. And that was really it. And then from there, it's just, you know, listening to records. I really wanted get into music. I really wanted to play guitar as a kid, but my parents were like, you know, no, you're not going to play guitar. You're going to play your dad's trumpet.
Oh, God.
So I played trumpet, which was cool. It could have been cool if I had somebody to kind of shepherd me through the trumpet playing process. But, you know, my experience playing the trumpet was band class in, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade. And we were playing, like, excerpts from, like, you know, Bolero and stuff like that, which wasn't always the coolest thing. So that had to compete with, you know, growing up with Van Halen and all the great guitar gods of the late 70s and early 80s, and so it lost, for lack of a better word. And then I started playing guitar when I was, I think, probably about in 7th grade, and just kind of followed it from there, you know, with very little encouragement from really anyone in my family. They were actually kind of discouraging of it until I got to an age where they were like, okay, I think he wants to do this for real. And then they kind of let go of trying to make me an attorney or something like that.
And what drew you to Nashville?
I moved to Nashville. My family's all from Southern California, and I went to school. I went to college in Boston, and then kind of my family resettled in St. Louis. So Nashville to me was just a geographic location I could go to that was a little bit closer than the East Coast. I mean, I was in Boston for a long time, then I lived in Philly for 12 years, and then moved back to Nashville more recently just to be closer to my family, really. And it was a music center, so it was like Chicago or Nashville, and it was Chicago's too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter, so Nashville it was. I knew nothing really about the city. I didn't know anything about country music, except for like one Garth Brooks song, and I didn't really know anything about the city. There wasn't a whole lot that I knew about Nashville, you know, and so I just moved here. I knew one person that lived here, and he was like, you should check out Nashville, and I was like, okay. So I packed up my stuff and I moved to Nashville. So there's really no real rhyme or reason to it other than I knew it was a music town, and it was closer to St. Louis.
I see. And in staying Nashville, did you ever matriculate yourself into the business there as sort of a session person or anything like that? Or
yeah, I mean, I did for survival purposes. I started touring, and then I, like I said, I have a studio here now. I had a small project studio in Philadelphia that I moved here that, you know, essentially nobody knew about. Over the years, people have kind of found their way to me, and I've got like a small group of people that I work with. But really, touring saved me. I got here, and there's just so much work here. There's so much work for musicians and, you know, sound people and, you know, production people and lighting people. I mean, it's really a pretty diverse area to move to, and there's tons of work as far as studio work and live performance work, and if you want to stay local and play in the clubs, you can. If you want to get on a tour, you can find your way onto a tour and never be in town if that's what you choose. So, yeah, I mean, I've done, you know, I've been on the road since I moved here, basically, and kind of made my living doing that and doing small studio projects. And it's been great because I've met a lot of musicians that way. It's the best way to meet the people who are you're going to be relying on later on when you need musicians for projects.
What songs off of the album resonate for you the most personally, and why?
I like Something Real just because it's kind of a little bit of a punk throwback to some of the stuff I grew up on, and I just kind of like the attitude of it. I also like Habit just because it's kind of a song that is a little, it's kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing kind of song. The feedback we've gotten from Habit is that everybody's like, wow, it's like a really fun kind of sexy song, and I'm like, it is, but at the same time it talks about a lot of things that are personal to me and personal to some friends and family members that I've had who've struggled with addiction and struggled with their habits, whether it be something as simple as smoking to something as complex as like trying to get off heroin. So you know, we didn't want that song to be heavy-handed, and when we first started writing it, it was pretty heavy and pretty heavy-handed, and didn't seem to fit with what we were trying to convey and the album we were trying to make, which is trying to keep it just a little more fun and a little less heavy-handed. So we were able to mask some of the lyrics and some of the wording and some of the ideas and make them a little more fun and maybe a little sexier than what we had originally started. So that those two songs probably stand out the most to me.
What do you think is next for you and Katie musically?
I'm actually really excited about these two new songs that we're working on. We've taken a completely different approach to writing this group of songs than we did on the last record, which was just she and I sitting down with two acoustic guitars and writing a song, you know, starting with a riff here or there, an idea that maybe somebody threw down on their iPhone or on their computer, and then going from there and working it out and actually having the song finished before we go into the studio and start embellishing the song. And when I say the song, it's the lyrics, the melody, and the form, essentially, you know, and the harmony. Whereas now we're taking a totally different approach. On the song that's finished, we started with like a bass groove and kind of put some loops around that, and then the guitar was very secondary to the entire process, which is nice because Blister's pretty guitar heavy, and the songs are pretty linear in their approach. And so the approach that we have now is get into the studio and just start throwing ideas against the wall and like coming up with like a loop, you know, or a dance groove or like this really cool kind of synth sound, and then kind of steering the chords to that, and then oh, maybe this riff would be really cool, or maybe this lyric would work. And we're kind of fleshing out the songs before the lyrics are written, and then going back and writing lyrics and then changing things, like, oh, let's put a bridge there instead of going, okay, we're going to go, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. It's like it's kind of working from the inside out, which is, I think, pretty cool, and I'm pretty excited about the, like, sonically how things are turning out because of that. And it's a little different too. It's becoming a little more, a little less heavy-handed guitar, bass, drum kind of thing. And it's the production's a little more interesting, in my opinion. We'll see what people think.
Visit Katie Kirkover at myspace.com/KatieKirkover. From her CD Blister, here is Katie once more with Something Real.
Look at me so perfectly.
You're listening to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we'll be back with music and interviews with Lucas Rossi and Jillian Risco after this teeny tiny little break. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush. At the top of the show, we featured pop rock princess Katie Kirkover. Now we're moving on to the Canadian-born rocker Lucas Rossi. Back in 2006, Lucas Rossi was the winner of the music contest reality show, Rockwired Supernova. The prize? He got to front a supergroup that featured Tommy Lee of Motley Crue, Jason Newsted of Metallica, and Gilby Clark of Guns N' Roses. When the band fizzled, Lucas stayed the course and is now on the verge of releasing his debut solo CD, Hollywood. I got a chance to catch up with Lucas to talk about the past and the future, and you'll hear it all in just a moment. Back in 2008, I interviewed Lucas when he was starting a band called Stars Down. Here's a song from that moment in time called Good Enough.
Myself in the bridge with you. Push me over like I don't matter when I can't swim. Throw me a line. Do you remember anything at all? The truth about you, well, never serious, your hysteria got the best of you, scratching at the walls, see who falls first. I know how hard it must have been to hold on to me, yeah. Oh, you would have been so good without me. Oh, I really think you should forget me, 'cause I don't love you. I have tried to make this right. Sick of it, sick of this life. What to do now but walk away and hope to say. You keep your hand on my head till I drown. It's no wonder you never knew how. Set me on fire. That's your desire. Set me in flames, and not in exchange. I know how to be myself. Oh,
this right, you're not good enough.
Visit Lucas Rossi at his official website, www.lucasrossionline.com. I had a chance to talk with Lucas over the phone about his forthcoming release. Here's how it went.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, nothing much. Just, I'm keep hearing about this video that's coming out.
Yeah, it's a track I did. Actually, it's the title track of my album. It's called Hollywood, which I'm really excited about, man, because it's kind of been a long time coming. It's a true-life story about, you know, what happened with me through the whole Supernova thing. And, you know, when the tour was done, I was kind of left for dead, you know? And, like, I didn't have a place to live or anything, really, and no one, seemed like no one really cared, at least the people that should have, you know? And I won't mention any names, but I was just kind of like, okay, well, I'm from Canada, and I just finished, like, a world tour, like, what's the deal? And, you know, it was enough to break somebody, you know, but I just kind of, you know, I grabbed my, grabbed life by the balls, I guess, so to speak, and I just refused to give up, man. You know, I started to do my own recordings and put together tours and so forth, and really just connect with the fans, man, because that's all that matters. At the end of the day, it's not, I learned shortly thereafter that, you know, stardom and celebrity is just a fickle and stupid thing, to be honest. It doesn't last, and it's not what's important. The music's important, and the people who get you there are, and I hold that dear.
So even after the Supernova debacle, I'll call it a debacle, I guess. I think it's safe to call it one now. So even after that, you were, like, you know, struggling as far as a place to live and all that? Because I know that was the case before Supernova.
I wasn't poor, I guess, like I was before, but I was just kind of, like, in limbo, right? I didn't know LA, I was in a new place, so, I mean, money or not, it's not about the money, it's about getting your feet planted on the ground, you know. And I thought I had people who, you know, truly cared about me, and I guess that's not the case, you know.
I see. And just to put everything into perspective for anyone who might be listening who doesn't quite know the story, you were the winner of the Rockstar Supernova, one of these, you know, music talent, you know, reality shows. What do you think is the biggest misconception people have about shows like this?
First of all, it wasn't an overnight success for me. A lot of people think, you know, a lot of shows are, you know, you come from nothing and then you're shot into superstardom. And that was a little bit of the case for me, but I've been doing it for 15 years and paying my dues that way. But yeah, it's like a yo-yo, you know, you go up and you go down and you go up and you go down. And if you don't have heart and dedication, and I guess if you're not a true artist, it's going to be over before it began, you know?
And even after, you know, Rockstar Supernova, you did, I mean, you were pretty active. I mean, you were in a couple of bands even after Supernova, but now you're settling into this solo recording. So how exciting is that for you?
It's great, man. I actually, I'm playing all the instruments on it. I'm drumming, I'm playing bass and guitar and piano and everything, really, and I'm producing it myself, so it's very rewarding at the end of the day. It took a long time. I didn't want to just put out music because I thought people would buy it. I don't think that's fair. You know, I'm not in this to really make money. If I do, that's awesome, but it's about the music, dude. It truly is, because if you don't have good songs and you don't have a good message, listeners aren't stupid, man. You know, you could have a pretty face and a nice haircut, but it doesn't matter, dude.
And talk about the title of the forthcoming album.
I'm calling it Hollywood because of basically Hollywood. I mean, is a tough place. You know, there's a lot of people trying to get to the same place at the same time. You know, and that can be hard. You know, actors, actresses, musicians, so on. So if you don't got it, you know, and if you're not a very hard worker, it's impossible, man. If you can make it here, I guess you could possibly make it anywhere.
And talk about what drew you to music in the beginning. How did that start?
My mom used to actually play Lionel Richie around the house, and my brother would slam Billy Idol around the house when I was really, really young, and I just remember feeling I could escape when I heard music, you know. There was no more sadness and no more fear, you know. Music kind of just took me away to like that place I called my own, you know.
And currently you've got the EP Dark and a Gun. Are any of the songs from that EP going to materialize in Hollywood, or no?
I was thinking that, but you know, I asked the fans what for that EP. That was mainly, you know, the songs that the fans have been wanting recordings of, and because I write so much music, you know, and some of the songs kind of get left behind, and I forget about the ones that I've done, you know. So and it's a good thing, you know. It's a good thing that I can write a lot and not, you know, run into not get stumped, because that's the worst when you have a slump and that. But yeah, I put out the EP because a lot of people were asking for the songs, and so I thought I'd do that for them, you know, before the record came out.
With that being said, how does songwriting work for you? How do you go about it?
I write the music first, and then I think of what I really want to say, man. You know, and turn it up as loud as possible, and lock all the doors, and just let it flow out. I think a lot of the best stuff that I've done was just kind of stream of thought. You know, a lot of things. Just like at shows, sometimes I'll write a song just on the stage during the show. Sometimes works out good, and sometimes it's just like whatever. But I think stream of thought is the key to my songwriting, because someone or something is speaking through me. That makes any sense, because some of the things I write are beyond what I could imagine.
Visit Lucas at his official website, www.lucasrossionline.com. Here is the title track from Lucas's forthcoming debut solo CD, Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Supernova, you guys released an album and you toured. I mean, and from what I can get, and from what I assume, your first world tour ever.
Yeah.
Describe that experience.
Oh, it was amazing, man. To have that opportunity to see the world and to just to like meet all these people that I probably never would have met because of the show and the group. I can't even put it into words. All it's probably was the best time of my life, you know. And I'm living that dream every day because of that, you know. It truly was a blessing, man. And I don't regret any of it. It was just, what I have today is because of all that, you know. And I still have, it's crazy. I still have all those fans from, you know, 3-some-odd years ago, and plus, you know, and that to me is a step in the right direction. You know, I keep doing what I'm doing for that, you know, for, like, when I flew to Australia, you're playing for, like, 10,000 people. That, I mean, a few months before that, I was in Toronto playing for 15 people and a couple empty beer bottles, you know, and that is just, I mean, what can I say?
And talk about how that train sort of ended.
We finished the tour, and it was kind of like, all right, well, what am I going to do? What are you guys doing? And I kind of knew in my heart, like, that it was time for me to, you know, put the armor back on and just start doing it all by myself again, you know. And it's, you know what, I'm so proud of the music that I've been doing lately. I mean, I don't know if you've heard it, but it's real as I can get, and I'm doing it, you know, without a label, and my street team, I love them to death. Everyone who works for me and with me is, you know, wow. It's pretty crazy that people dedicate so much of their time. I mean, something as small as Twitter, like people all day just talking about myself and the music that I'm doing is, you know, it's amazing, dude. Like, and then when I hit people back, they're like, is this really you? Yeah, of course it's really me. Why wouldn't I tell you how much I appreciate that from my mouth? Like, why would I have some person doing my updates and all that crap for me, you know? It's like, I think that's what separates me. You know, I'm not anything special, but I just have noticed that other artists, not all of them, but a lot of them, who have, you know, reached a certain point, feel it not to be necessary to be real and frank with your fans, you know? Like, they have to keep mysteriousness and all that crap. Like, that to me is bull, you know?
Yeah, you were telling me you're recording, you know, yeah, I mean that you've recorded all the songs on Hollywood all by yourself, playing all the instruments. Is anyone helping you in terms of production, or...?
No, man, I actually, I'm a certified engineer, and I produce other groups and so forth, so, you know, thank God I took on recording. Like, I had a big part to do with even the Supernova record. I was, a lot of the pre-production and songwriting on that and so forth. So, you know, I wasn't green to the whole thing. So it was just a blessing that I had. Actually, cool story. For a gift, a surprise one day, my wife came in the room and she had a camera, like a video camera, and I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, well, I have a surprise for you. And I opened this envelope, and my fans all donated, which is just unbelievable, all donated to send me to a production Pro Tools engineering course.
Wow.
Like, how amazing is that, dude? And, you know, so for me, to turn around and act the higher and the better is just would be ridiculous, you know?
And with the pending release of Hollywood, once it's released, what would you want people to come away with after they've heard it?
You know, I just a sense of realism, and I want them just to be a part of this journey, you know? You know, every song, I think, has something to do with everybody in every walk of life, and I don't write selfishly, I write for, you know, like I always mention, you know, songs were meant to be kind of a protest songs back in the day, and not about, you know, pimps and hoes and you know, popping bottles, and I believe in song somehow. I guess I'm kind of old school this way, but I believe that song is very healing, and at least for me, and if it can do that for others, then I'm doing my job.
Visit Lucas at his official website, www.lucasrossionline.com. From his forthcoming CD, Hollywood, here is Lucas Rossi once again with The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
You're listening to Rockwired Radio exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we'll be back with the dark romantic sound of Jillian Risco after this teeny tiny little break. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we've entered the final segment of the show. Just because it's the last thing on the agenda, don't make it any less important. As a matter of fact, rock singer Jillian Risco has been something of a ray of sunlight here at Rockwired since I became acquainted with her toward the end of last year, when she released her amazing CD, 1111. At the top of the year, Jillian was nominated for the Rockwired Reader's Poll Award for Best Female Artist. When I spoke to her this time, she had just ended an extensive Borders tour and is now being sponsored by Daisy Rock Guitars. She told me all about it, and you'll hear all about it in just a few minutes. From her CD 1111, here is Jillian Risco with Run Heart Run.
Something out, my heart racing.
From her CD 1111, that was Jillian Risco with Run Heart Run. Visit Jillian Risco at www.jillianrisco.com. I had the opportunity to catch up with Jillian a couple of days ago. Here's how it went.
Your album has a curious title, 1111. Where does it come from?
1111 stems from the whole wishful thinking idea. I don't know who came up with it, but it was a really cool idea. But the whole wishing at 11:11 a.m. and p.m. and, you know, your wish will come true, and you can wish on so many different things. But I thought that was just a special thing. 11 has been a number in my life that has reappeared over and over, time and time again, even with the rest of my family. It has, and seems to be a lucky number. And so the whole 11:11 concept is to bring people hope and inspiration as far as whatever their goals and aspirations and dreams are, and saying that, hey, you know, you can do it, and just stay positive, and you will get there if you work hard enough. So it's a whole wishful thinking idea.
How long did it take to put the whole album together?
To put the whole album together, the writing and producing process went on, and recording process went on for about a year, and then we released it in October 2009.
I see. And now that all the work that has gone into making it is behind you, how do you feel about the end result?
I am really, really proud of it, being an all-original, I think it's a great rock pop record, all-original. The producer I worked with, he's a great, great producer, great musician, great person to work with, and I'm extremely proud of the result, and I think a lot of people have been very receptive to it, which is always a great thing as far as something you put out like that. So it's been positive reviews, and I'm always constantly writing, but I'm very proud of the product that ended up being 1111.
Have there been any reactions to the album that have surprised you at all?
Surprises? I don't think so, as far as any, like, crazy, weird surprises. It's all been, like I said, it's all been really positive, and people told me, like, I wasn't maybe expecting that from you, and which has been a good thing, and I was really excited about it. So I don't think there's been any crazy surprises. I haven't, you know, turned anything totally, totally different, but I still wanted to bring something new, and really introduce my dark romantic sound to my fans and friends and everyone that listens to my music, and I think they are starting to understand where I'm coming from musically, which is really cool.
Yeah, when I interviewed you last, you've described your sound as being darkly romantic. Talk about that.
Dark romanticism comes from the whole concept of songs that are expressive and charming, and yet they have something powerful to say. And a lot of that stems from, you know, the whole, like, strings, the whole orchestra type of stuff, and synth work, and really heavy emotional guitars. That's all part of it. I'm always telling people, I hope, you know, someday I have like a 50-piece orchestra in my band. And that whole term is, like I said, expressive, charming, dramatic lyrics with a heavy point, whether it be happy or sad, in the emotions. And it comes across in the lyrics and the sound as well.
How did music begin for you?
Music began, actually, I would, this is actually kind of embarrassing, but I would sing along to all these, like, little kids sing-along tapes that my mom and dad bought for me when I was a toddler, and I would always be singing along with them, and that would be something that I would do when I wasn't at preschool that I just loved doing. And then I got into choir at school, and then it went to piano lessons after a friend suggested that, and I decided maybe we should try voice. My piano teacher, who was also a vocal coach, she said, yeah, let's try you in voice lessons. And then it just went on from there. I started performing, and then I started recording when I was
when I was 10 years old, which was really neat, and it just went on from there.
And talk about songwriting. How did that start?
Songwriting actually started when, let me think, I think I wrote a song when I was 9, but I really started writing when I was 11. And the song I wrote when I was 9 was about the sun, so really important stuff. It obviously affects everyone, but I started actually writing like lyrics when I was 11 years old, going into the 6th grade, and I was about to turn 12. And I heard Christina Aguilera's Stripped record, which was really, I think, like kind of groundbreaking for the pop music world as far as her putting out a record that was so emotional and powerful for a female artist, that it really like inspired me at such a young age, and I just started writing all these different lyrics, and so I think that one album put me into the whole writing side of things, and I knew I was going to write anyway because I had always been very imaginative when I was younger, and started writing lyrics mostly like about love, and I was only 11, so I'm not sure how much of that was all what was fictional, what was real at that point in time, but yes.
And with that being said, how do you go about writing a song? How does that happen for you?
Probably like any writer would tell you, the songwriting process varies from song A to song Z. It's very different. One process can start out with a melody in my head and I go record it. It can start out with just a couple lines of lyrics. And sometimes I'll just pick up the guitar and start playing something. I'll pick out something on the piano. So the songwriting process is very vastly varied for me right now at this point, just like I think anyone else in the songwriting world would tell you. So.
And from the album, what songs resonate for you the most personally and why?
Ooh, let's see. I don't know if I could specifically pick just one song, just because I'm really proud of all of them, and they all have to do with a specific situation. I know Tell Me is important to me, just under the case that I wrote it when I was 16, and I re-recorded it a couple different times, and it seems to trigger a lot of different emotions in people, and I've had people come up to me and tell me like how it made them, like it affected them in a different way or another, and it seems to be a powerful song and that people are connecting to, and in different situations, which is really cool. So it's a specific song for me, but it's reaching all sorts of different people in different situations, which I think is really cool when one song with maybe one specific message can do that, but it transfers into a few different things to a few different people. So, and then Lie the Truth is also, I really like that one. It really connects a lot, just because it's sort of like a rock lullaby of telling someone, you know, everything's going to be all right, but it's really not, so lie me the truth. But yeah, I'm really, like I said, I'm really proud of every song on the album. They all have to do with specific situations in my life that I have gone through, and so it is kind of hard to pick a favorite.
In looking at your MySpace, it looks like you've put a band together since we've last talked.
Yes, I have. There's actually a new layout coming any time right now, which I'm really excited about. But I formed a band almost 6 months ago now, and it is Join Risco in the 21st Century. It's kind of going with that whole old school vibe of the name, as me being the lead singer and rhythm guitarist, like Diana Ross and the Supremes. I was really inspired of naming the band through that whole 60s Motown group. I'm not Motown, obviously. I'm rock pop, but I thought that whole concept of names of bands like that was just really cool, and so I went with that. And the 21st Century stems from me turning 21 this year, and It is the 21st century, and we, you know, we're here to bring a new decade of rock and roll to everyone. And thankfully, I found really good members, Trace Ball on guitar and Tim Ning on bass, and everyone's been really great, and I'm really excited to be working with the guys. So,
do you foresee recording with them in the future?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, they're really, like I said, they're really talented and nice guys, and for sure, we're actually gonna be recording a couple things this year. So.
Visit Jillian Risco at her official website, www.jillianrisco.com. From her CD 1111, here is Jillian once again with Lie the Truth. Looking at your MySpace page, I see that you're doing a tour of Borders. Talk about that.
Yes, my band and I, Trace and Tim and myself, we have been to, the tour actually ends this Saturday in St. Peter's, Missouri, which is a St. Louis suburb in Borders, and we had 25 different dates in 6 Midwest states, which included Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, and Oklahoma. And it was all Borders stores. We did a couple Best Buys and a couple Street Side Records stores as well. and they were all acoustic shows, and I just thought it would be a cool thing to go out and promote 1111 under an acoustic environment, just for the fact that it's more intimate and you can get to know people and fans better. They can hear you just like crystal clear and get your message crystal clear, and it's been really fun, and I can't believe it's over. It started the end of March and we're ending it this Saturday night, but it's been really fun, and Daisy Rock Guitars actually sponsored it after my endorsement with them in February.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And just for clarification, Daisy Rock, they make the guitars for little girls and stuff, right?
They do make girl guitars. They make guitars specifically for females, for girls. For women, they are such a great company. They're a growing company, and they have great ideas, and they have a great team behind them. And thank you, Tish and Jennifer, for the endorsement, because they sent me a lovely guitar, and they've been really supportive of telling people what's going on with me in the community and all that. And so they do make girly guitars. The guitar I have right now is pink and sparkly, but it plays amazing, and it's made for, you know, it's made for a woman, it's made for a girl, and I couldn't think of, you know, a better company to endorse me and to endorse other independent female artists. And girl power, I'm going to say that right now, like the Spice Girls, but they're so great, and definitely getting rock and guitars into the hands of girls throughout the past 10 years that they've been around, and they're doing a great job.
What would you like someone to come away with after they've heard 1111?
After they've heard 1111, I hope they come away with more than one idea in their head, more than one thought in their head, more than one emotion change in their mind. Because every song has a different message and situation, so I hope they come away, though, with there is, you know, that whole wishful thinking process, and you are able to do what you want, and if you work hard enough, even though it's a collection of various situations and songs, and so I hope they come away with different thoughts and ideas in their mind, but the whole fact of the wishful thinking process, I hope that comes along to them.
And what do you think is next for you musically?
Ooh, let's see, next, the future, next. Well, the future always comes along, whether, you know, we're prepared for it or not, which I feel like I am prepared. I just quoted Pretty in Pink. I'm pretty sure Ducky just said that. I just watched that movie. So. Oh, I'm quoting 80s cult films. Awesome. but I hope, as far as musically in the future for me, I just evolve more with my dark romantic sound, because that is an important sound that I have always written in the style of, and it just evolves over time with each record and each song that I write. And I definitely, obviously, live shows, I would love to perform all over, and definitely songwriting. I'm getting more into like the songwriting process and collaborating with other songwriters and producers, and that's something very important to me since I've been writing for so long. And just more, evolving more in the dark romanticism side of my music, and writing more, and obviously playing some rock and roll.
Visit Jillian Risco at her official website, www.jillianrisco.com. From her CD 1111, here is Jillian Risco once again with Where Do You Go When You're Gone? Yeah. Going to do it for today's edition of Rockwired Radio. A special thanks goes out to Katie Kirkover, Tim Craven, Amanda Kagan, Lucas Rossi, Melissa Kramer, and Jillian Risco. I couldn't have done it without you guys. For Rockwired, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company, and is also available exclusively at rockwired.com.